Big developments in sports, too. You heard Art Chansky's Sports Notebook talking about the NBA playoffs with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors seemingly on cruise control. Still one round left for both before they meet in a rematch in the NBA Finals, but neither team has lost so far in the NBA playoffs. So we're talking about that, too. And we're joined on the air by Dr. Deb Strohman of the Kenan Flagler Business School, also a sports commentator who also just came from that rally at Peace and Justice Plaza as well. So Dr. Strohman, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Aaron. It certainly provides perspective when you go from seeing the possibility of civil rights, the ability to litigate for civil rights being challenged, to thinking about a very, very important outlet for many Americans, which is sports. And certainly sport does provide a mirror for what happens in society, but also, as I've stated previously, it can be a platform for change. And one day I'll be encouraged when we'll have our local athletes, whether that's high school, college, or pro, coaches and administrators come out and be on the front line for civil rights issues as well. But I guess I'm rambling now. I'm deflecting.
Well, let's actually start by talking about that event today that, again, just wrapped up at Peace and Justice Plaza. You were there, and we'll have a couple people coming in today and tomorrow to talk about it as well. But what happened? What was said?
Well, the most important thing, why people gather, the idea is, number one, to create awareness around an issue. And I don't think there's a bigger topic in Chapel Hill right now that most liberals, progressives, and people who just care about humanity and civil rights than this issue of a proposal from two or three Board of Governors members who want to stop the ability of organizations like this at North Carolina Central and at UNC Chapel Hill, where they have an entity that provides litigation services for poor people, for brown and black people in the state. And so to have a number of speakers from our very own Reverend William Barber, who came in and provided comments, to the local Chapel Hill Carborough NAACP leaders. And I was really moved by a young white male who is actually a student at the law school who came to Chapel Hill to be a civil rights lawyer and hear his pleas, as in, please don't stop this ability to stop my learning in the field. Where you actually need to go out and interact with the community and learn the ins and outs and how to be a great negotiator and debater and all the necessary skills to be a good attorney.
And we're talking about this with a couple of people this week, and they're all saying the same thing, which is a really good point, that the Center for Civil Rights is so in line with the mission of the university, both in terms of service, and obviously UNC is very concerned with its role as an agency of public service and very proud of the extent to which it fills that mission. And certainly the center does that. And also the Center for Education. I mean, you got law school students who need to learn how to litigate in order to get through law school and be effective attorneys when they get into that field. What better way to do it than to actually give them hands-on experience doing it? And that's one of the things the center does.
Well, quite sadly, that is not what these gentlemen on the Board of Governors are looking at. Most things I found boil down to money, to economics. Mm-hmm. And what they're concerned with is the ability of a UNC entity, even though it receives no state funding, but to have a UNC entity sue counties or municipalities. And what I've been able to unpack or research is that one of the gentlemen is actually very close to one of these counties that lost, and they lost big. Mm-hmm. Now, no one's talking about the discrimination that was taking place. They just want to focus on the fact that this county lost dollars. They lost a big lawsuit. So who helped the other side win? Well, you go back, and it was the UNC Center for Civil Rights. So that's what's really disturbing. It's all about the economics, not about the mission. And when I look at the mission of the university, of our general administration, for all of our universities, there is no doubt that one of the most glaring things for me is that we are supposed to apply knowledge to address the needs of individuals in society. And this particular civil rights center, it definitely is strongly knowledge application in the real world. And it's definitely addressing needs. So I find that it very much parallels our mission from the GA level to locally our Chapel Hill mission as well.
Speaking with Dr. Deb Strom and UNC Kenan Flagler Business School, we're talking about the UNC Center for Civil Rights, which is facing that proposal at the Board of Governors to effectively ban it from engaging in litigation. And you know, it's so important to bear in mind that, you know, this proposal at the Board of Governors is being considered, and you mentioned it, just because there are so many lawsuits that the center has won, and that is a sign that, you know, for people who are still having trouble getting this, that civil rights is still a very important and very real and very present issue in society today, not just in terms of municipalities, but also just in terms of society at large. One of the things that we're seeing in the news in sports right now, and I know we wanted to talk about this too, was you can't go to Fenway Park anymore without hearing racial slurs coming from members or coming from fans in the stands. And who was it? CeCe Sabathia, who's with the Yankees now, saying, oh yeah, every single African-American athlete who's in the major leagues has had to deal with that specifically at Fenway Park. You can't avoid it.
Well, it's a very, very challenging issue right now. We're thinking about civility and how do you encourage civility? How do you enforce it? And in particular, in the sport arena, in professional sport stadiums or facilities. There are other things that bother fans, drunkenness, profanity. But when you add racist speech, now you're talking about taking it to the next level. And I think that Boston is not happy with their reputation of being a very racist city. And as an African-American woman, I heard that in my 20s, that Boston was one of the most racist cities. Now, was it because certain incidents received national, international attention? I'm not sure, because I can't imagine that the dynamics or the racial makeup is Boston is much different than a New York or Philadelphia, you know, your major international cities in the Northeast. But there's something going on in that city where some of your more prominent athletes are speaking up as to something's in the water up there. I'm thinking about how leaders need to model civility. And when we say our leaders, it has to start with, you know, our president. And right now, the culture or the climate is very, very contentious, and many of what, you know, some people call the crazies or the really mean-spirited people are really feel empowered right now to say things. I'm thinking about families. They must nurture civility, and certainly we're hopeful that when you're born that your parents, your grands, or your foster parents are saying the right things to help you to know right from wrong, and at the very least to be kind to one another. And then lastly, I would say society, we have to promote civility. And this is where you have your sport operators, your front offices who are saying, you know what, we're not going to allow that in our sporting competition in our arena. And everything from using facial recognition software now to scanning tickets and seeing if your name is on a list to having little apps on people's phones where if they hear something ugly, they can press an app. And it will go to the security who's not too far away, and they'll come over to the section and address the situation. But it's very, very heated time right now in terms of this type of language.
Is Boston doing enough? Are the Red Sox doing enough? I know they were kicking fans out who are yelling at the players, and they did issue that that public apology the first time that this sort of made its way into the news a couple of weeks ago. Is that sufficient, or do they need to do more?
Well, the team statement said that they have a zero tolerance for the behavior and that they're very, very upset, and they're encouraging people to report statements like this to security. But what they're saying in particular is that they're going to have what's called like a lifetime ban, and then they're subject to further action. And we've had some athletes say that people should be fined. And I'm not talking about $500, but, you know, $30,000, as in that will really hit them in the pocketbook, so to speak. Others say that maybe there should be some type of community service or some type of criminal action to be taken in the sense that you're in a family atmosphere and you're creating distress. So it's interesting, but right now we're just doing, at the Fenway Park, they're just doing a ban.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman again, Kenan Flechler Business School, and I got to let you go in a second, but I want to at least give you a chance to talk about the thing that we were going to start with, which was the NBA playoffs, Cleveland versus Golden State, looking like a rematch the way that these two teams are playing. What do you make of the playoffs?
Well, it looks like we're headed towards a collision with the Cavaliers and the Warriors. I know both teams are very happy that their opponents are being drawn out into six-game, seven-game series, possibly. But the compelling story for me is I'm watching the bench play, and right now the Cavaliers' bench seems to be stronger than the Warriors. But if the Warriors don't need their bench, I guess that could lead to a championship. Sure. The other thing that I'm looking at is the injuries. We've had major players go down. And so Golden State and Cleveland, they were very, very purposeful to get those four-game sweeps. Utah's George Hill's out, Nene, the Wizards. Chicago Bulls lost Rajon Rondo. The Clippers lost Blake Griffin. And now we're talking about the Spurs losing Tony Parker, and Kawhi Leonard is hurt. And, you know, Kawhi said that he'll come back for the next game. But the longer these series play out, that means possibilities of more injuries, and then the Warriors and Cavs being even in a better place to meet in the NBA Finals.
Dr. Deb Stroman, Kenan Flagler Business School, thank you so much.
Thank you.